Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to the Jewel Network. The Jewel Network is a radio frequency of continuous streaming knowledge and wisdom, which promotes and sustains the activation of the present evolutionary process of immortality and the unfolding of the God Self within the evolving planetary society presently on planet Earth. The Jewel Network is committed to teaching the sciences of life and the science of living. By cultivating the mind of a scientist, you will be able to extract the very best the current century has to offer. You are listening to the Dr. Jewel Show with your host, microbiologist, preventative medicine and hygiene physician, Dr. Jewel Pilgrim, MD. Join Dr. Jewel here each Wednesday at 7 p.m. on the Jewel Network, hosted by thejewelnetwork.net.
Welcome, world. How are you? You have tuned in to the Dr. Jewel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel, and this show is being brought to you by the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, hosted on Blog Talk Radio. And so, as usual, every Wednesday we have the opportunity to just really kind of just have a discussion and share wonderful information regarding the quality of our lives and how that life literally comes into fruition. So I'm going to start having guests come back on the show because I've run into a large number of just incredible individuals who have fabulous gifts and talents, and there's no need for me to summarize what it is that they do. I think that it's far more important that you hear it directly from them, directly from the horse's mouth. So we'll be bringing back a cascade of individuals for them to share their knowledge and wealth with you. So guess what? We're starting today, and we are bringing you a special guest, an individual who's a well-kept secret, who many of you know about, and I'm sure when you tune in every Friday here at the Jewel Network, you have the opportunity to hear his genius, for he has a magical gift, a special area of the brain, well developed, the acoustic auditory area of the brain that allows him to really appreciate sound in an incredible way, and has really allowed many of us to experience the electromagnetic spectrum, light, which one of its manifestations literally is sound, harmonics, which we call music usually, in a way that has allowed us to make incredible changes in our body. Very, very interesting. And I tell you, one of the most important attributes that you can obtain for yourself to really evolve the quality of your life as well as your mind, accessing it as well as your brain, and most of all, accessing your soul, your spirit, is information. And so just to kind of just throw some ideas and thoughts out there, because our special guest today with me is Mr. Maurice Thompson. And many of you know him as Jeff Maurice, who is the host and co-creator of the show Music for the Mind of a Scientist. And he has a plethora of incredible gifts and talents, but in the science of music, boy, the things that he knows and what he's been able to do, it's just incredible and, you know, very humble and very inconspicuous to most people. relative to the genius and the gift that he has, I thought it was just so important that all of you worldwide really begin to recognize that the Jewel Network not only gives and broadcasts jewels, but also it literally is built on jewels. So, you know, over time we're going to start introducing, as you know, Julie and obviously Dr. Blair and now Maurice, as he's very lovingly referred to. These are real jewels composing the Jewel Network that allows you to understand why we shine in the field of enlightening radio broadcasting. People have spent all kind of time and talent on cultivating themselves, and they just radiate. And so wonderful that you tuned in today, because we're going to deal with that aspect of the electromagnetic spectrum known as sound. And obviously when we talk about sound, we have to talk about color. And then when we talk about color and sound, then we can also talk about music. And, you know, I was just thinking that it was so interesting that as all of us have learned to a greater or lesser extent how to become literate as far as the English language, that's still something that is a huge deficit in our educational process, is that most individuals still have not learned how to read the language of music. And I think that it's a real drawback that we have not basically been taught the basic scale, how to read that scale, how to translate harmonics into glyphs, okay, that we call notes, and to really understand that value. And I strongly suggest that any of you who are really interested in cultivating to a greater extent the areas of the brain, the acoustic areas of the brain, that you will want to begin to take some basic music instruction and definitely learn the language of music. So without further ado, we're going to have an announcement from our sponsor, and then we'll be right back to welcome our special in-house guest for today, the Master of Music, the fabulous show Music for the Modular Scientist, Mr. Maurice Thompson, will be joining us as soon as you get back. So paper, pad, paper, writing instrument, and water, please, while we take a word from our sponsor. Be right back.
Would you like to be smarter, more at peace in your life? Are you searching for a greater spiritual connection? All of this and much more can be yours by enrolling in Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program. Many participants feel effects from day one, and in no time you can enjoy the physiological effects equal to 8 hours of meditation in as little as 15 minutes a day. To learn more and sign up for Dr. Jewel's Balancing Program, please visit our website, www.thejewelnetwork.net.
Welcome. If you're just tuning in, great, because we have a guest today on the Dr. Jewel Show. I'm Dr. Jewel, your host for the Dr. Jewel Show, and this is being brought to you on the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, hosted on Blog Talk Radio. And we have a fabulous guest with us in-house. We are going to just share some time with the co-producer and creator of our Friday Jewel, our Friday Gem, Music for the Mind of a Scientist. And that is Mr. Maurice Thompson. So we lovingly call him Maurice. Hello, Maurice. How are you?
Hello, Dr. Jewel. I'm doing fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, well, wonderful. You know, usually this is a healing, literally, that has to occur in our society, that we have to really begin to recognize that we're surrounded by abundance and that we're surrounded by greatness all of the time. And, you know, if we look within first, we'll see it in ourselves, and then obviously we can easily see it around us, and obviously to see it right next to you, very close to you, you want to recognize that as opposed to always thinking that something or somewhere far away is much more valuable? What is it, the little term they use, that you believe that the pastures are greener on the other side of the road here, when, you know, literally it depends on what you're looking for, and if you're even able to see that, you're recognizing where you are can be whatever you envision it to be. And so at the Jewel Network, we have fabulous jewels and gems of talent and individuals, and I just want to spend some time with you because I want people to really understand from a scientific perspective how important music is and what has happened. You know, we spend time off the air very often talking about phenomena that have occurred in the electromagnetic spectrum that we call sound, and how this has really been manipulated, heavily studied, and also heavily manipulated to literally cause total changes in states of awareness, functionality of the body, a change in manifestation of matter. It's just really been interesting. Just recently I was reading that every manifestation of matter has a harmonic that accompanies it and must accompany it before the actual object can take on a physical state. Now, that is interesting to know, that the harmonic, that frequency, the sound of it has to manifest first before the physical reality is present for us to touch and see and smell, etc. That literally it's the sound that must come first. And, you know, as I'm saying this to you, Maurice, you know, that statement that people talk about that has been written in the Bible, where they talk about the prelude to manifestation was to speak it, and then it would be. Is that correct?
Exactly, exactly. When they talk about the word, and the word being with the creator, and, you know, it's interesting. When you look at the idea of a word being present with the creator and in the creative process, there had to be somewhere for that word to bounce off of. So that means that you're literally talking about the utterance of a frequency.
Exactly.
That begins to resonate. I mean, we look at words that very oftentimes we throw around, like being in harmony. You know, people living in harmony. You know, that's a musical term. That's, you know, people talk about being attuned to their higher self or to God. You know, once again, you're talking about musical terms. Even the word universe is a musical term, because you're talking about one verse or one turn of the song. So this whole idea of a universe that spirals out is the essence of what we come to know of when we speak about the structure of songs as verses.
That is amazing. Well, I think that also really causes us to pause and really think about it. It's that, okay, what is the, should I use the term harmonic, or what is the sound for your iPad or your iPhone or for your television or the CD that you may be holding or looking at, or the book that you may be reading? Because all of these have a vibration, a sound that has to exist and sustain itself before the physical manifestation can be perceived. Isn't that amazing?
Very true. And one thing that I think is really key to keep in mind with that is that things that we see in existence are more than just one vibration. There are what's known as complex frequencies. So in order to generate one particular, to create a particular result, there are various pieces to that orchestra that are providing their own individual frequencies that eventually come together to be recognized and known as one song or the one eventual result that we're looking for.
So you're saying that something complex, for example, like a TV set, has perhaps a number of different sounds that are in combination to allow that matter to coalesce so that we can see it and hear it and touch it. Is that what you're saying?
So definitely, they're looking at- because you have the frequency, you have your frequency if you decided that you wanted a television. So the thought that you put out that you want to have a television in your home is one frequency. Then you have the frequency of the person that sold you the television, whether it's a retail store or you bought it online. That person had a frequency that they wanted to make in exchange for a profit. So they had their frequency involved. Then you had the television manufacturer. Then you had the people in the factories that were working to provide for their families. Then you have the people that sold the parts to the factory so that they could create the television. Then you have the marketers. Then you have the promoters. Then you have the people that are on the television, whether it's they're creating commercials or creating actual shows or working behind the scenes at the television station, that all wanted you to have a television so that their jobs continue. So when we look at that example, we start to see how many different – we look at how many different people are involved in you having a television and imagine that each one of them has their own individual frequency, then we can start to understand what we mean when we say that that everything has its own particular frequency and that each frequency is very specific for each thing that you get. Because if you get a 42-inch TV versus a 55-inch TV, those are two different frequencies. They affect two different groups of people.
Well, I mean, that is profound in itself, that everyone who has contributed to allow you to finally wind up with the TV set in your home or wherever you put it has contributed to the audiation. That is the sound component that has to be present before the physical structure of the TV can manifest for you. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And it's and when we talk about these frequencies and we get to the point where we start talking about sound, you know, sound is only but a very small fragmented portion of this vast amount of frequency that creates the universe that we exist in. Very similar to how the visible light spectrum is a very small frequency of the electromagnetic spectrum that we can actually interact with our eyes. So we have a rather limited amount of space that we can actually deal with through the phenomenal pieces of equipment that we have known as ears. And those are broken down in a term that's known as the limits of perception. So the human ear normally can hear sounds in the range between 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz or 20 kilohertz. And then, of course, this limit, this upper limit tends to decrease with age, and it varies slightly depending on how well you keep up with your ears and in what kind of environment you use them.
Right. Well, I think something that most people aren't aware of is the fact that every segment of the brain, you know, and I'm constantly talking about these circuits, that the circuits of the brain, every circuit of the brain also has its own auditory system. So this is why we have people, for example, that can hear conversations that are going on in infrared. So, for example, that individual whose area of the brain that modulates infrared is activated and they are consciously aware of it can hear the conversations of people, life forms, that are existing in infrared. So I thought it was so interesting. Remember this show that came on a couple of years ago where this gentleman was able to communicate with what supposedly were individuals who had died, that their bodies had been left here in the Hertison realm, and they obviously, because they don't have a physical body, are not able to demonstrate themselves in this Hertz reality. But because we know that all energy is created and can never be destroyed, then obviously they still exist, but within a different frequency. And this one, or the two of them, I think, entities have the capacity to have the area of the brain that modulates infrared could actually hear these individuals and their conversations. So with that, and, you know, conventional medicine is still struggling with comprehending reality because of the limitation of the development of the brain collectively, that these individuals seem to be very unique and questionable. But also, too, when we recognize that when we have more brain tissue activated, that we are able to interact with the harmonics of reality at very, very different levels. I think that, you know, Beethoven was deaf, but yet and still he was able to manifest music in this realm, even though he couldn't hear Hertz frequencies. There's a lady that they've referenced who is an excellent percussionist, okay? She can't hear also, but she's able to perceive vibrations through her feet and her hands and is able to then follow a continuous stream of sound where she's able to integrate the percussion harmonics with these additional frequencies. So, you know, Maurice, you do something very interesting on your show because you have taken all types of music and you have begun to introduce to us the concepts of what these pieces of art literally are doing and how they are interfacing with particular segments of the body. And so I think that if you can just give us, first of all, the basic primer of what we're really doing when we listen to music and what we need to be aware of and if any type of prescriptions, et cetera, I think that's real important. I was sitting here, because you talked to me a lot about frequency, and I was sitting here looking at a chart, and this chart talks about octaves, and then it talks about frequencies, and it has these numbers, and then it talks about the note that we, you know, we talk about as far as being able to write a piece of music or read it, and then they show us the corresponding color. So what are they telling us when we're talking about music here, that it has an octave, it has a frequency, it has a note, it has a color? So people, many people don't recognize, for example, I thought it was interesting, and then I'm going to definitely give you the microphone and take it from here, but they were saying that the sun is really blue, that the sun is really blue, and that when you're able to get out of the atmosphere surrounding Earth, you'll see that it's basically blue and that it appears only, you know, reddish-yellow to us because of how the energy from the sun interacts with our atmosphere, and obviously it changes the harmonics. So if the whole frequency is changed from interaction with our atmosphere, but in and of itself, the sun literally has been identified to be blue. And now that is probably mind-blowing for individuals who have just taken for granted that, of course, everybody knows the sun is, you know, golden yellow, et cetera. Well, I mean, is it really that? Okay, and really, what are we looking at? So if the sun is blue, but then again it turns yellow-orange for us, then explain to us really what's happening here and what are we going to do about these phenomena? Because if you don't mind, I'd like for you to tell everybody what even happened to music. We've talked about the fact that people don't even really hear the truer octaves of music and the scales anymore because it was decided it should be changed. Amazing. Well
master, of course,
give us the info.
Well, you know, as usual, Doc, you are on point with everything. And I think that you've just taken over a year's worth of my shows and condensed it down into a few short sentences, because all of that is really what we're experiencing. And what I do on the Music for the Mind of the Scientist show, I like to provide our listeners with what I coin an audible dexterity. I want people to be able to take on as wide of a range of sound frequencies as possible, because it literally is the equivalent of being able to deal with more of the electromagnetic spectrum in that 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz frequency range. And if you can cover that kind of a span, then you're definitely utilizing more of the brain, because each of those different frequencies fall on different parts of the inner ear and are interacting with different audibility neurons. So you're literally taking on using more of your brain when you listen to different types of sound. So that's really the first part. And then in between there, we drop certain gems about the history of music and the interrelation of frequency, because what most people are listening to as we speak is a truncated musical scale, and from that truncation, it's been compressed into a awkward spot. And what I mean by that awkward spot is that there is a concert pitch which places a middle A note at 440 hertz, and this was generated about 80, 90 years ago. By people like J.C. Deegan and the like. So when we start to talk about the shift of the frequency, we're literally talking about the musical scale that at one time was used as a medicine for us, as a realigning device so that we would stay in our complete connection with the which would allow us to stay in our complete connection with everything.
I think you should state that again. So that was very profound, that everybody can make sure they get this. So you're saying that the frequencies of sound that originally we were aligned with and the instruments that we use to sustain that would automatically keep our resonance radar frequencies in unison or in proper relationship with the harmonics of everything else. And when that was altered or disturbed, now what we listen to intentionally perpetuates us staying out of sync with the harmonics of everything else. Is that what you just said?
That is exactly right, and you use one of the key terms, and that is resonance. When we talk about the way that we interact with the world around us on this Hertzian realm, we are literally talking about resonance, because when you reach out to touch the wall and you feel the solidity of the wall, what you're actually feeling is a vibrational rate variance between the cells and the atoms of your body and the cells and the atoms of the wall, which ultimately are the exact same thing, but it's just that the vibrational rates are different enough to where they create a field that keeps them from one from falling into the other. But once upon a time, our resonances and our vibrations were completely in tune with nature, and we had musical instruments that we would use as healing devices for whenever we did happen to come out of harmony, disharmonized, we could use these musical instruments to strum and vibrate, and then we would resonate with those tunes that would come from those instruments to bring us back into where we were supposed to be.
Okay, well, let me...
The whole...
Please finish, because I have a question for you. It's real important.
Okay. But about 1,000 years ago, the institution of the Catholic Church took the original musical scale out of the use of the monks that would sing these praises that literally were creating these ladders into higher states of consciousness. And that's when you get, and that's when you were given the do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do musical scale.
Okay.
Which in actuality originated from an ancient Latin hymn called Unquiet Naxos. So instead of do, you had ut. So it was more like ut, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si. And then it would go right back to ut. But they took two of them, they changed two of the notes, and then caused it to recreate and regenerate itself literally on the wrong foot.
Wow. So while you were talking about these ancient instruments that were used as tools to ensure that we continue to resonate and remain in resonance and harmony with all the other frequencies around us, I immediately, you know, started looking at the stelas and the walls in Egypt. I've seen in many of these temples. And so looking at the horns that they played, as well as the string instruments, the harps, we know, obviously, that those instruments have existed for over 5,000, depends on whose readings and whose evaluation on the age of these icons in Egypt. Some say they're 10,000 years old, et cetera, that those two instruments have existed for over 10,000 years. And what happened, how did they change the resonance of a harp or a horn to distort it so that now it plays a different harmonic where we no longer resonate with nature anymore? So did they change the tension on the strings, which changed the harmonic, for example, on the harp? And, you know, a piano is nothing but a harp on its side with legs.
Exactly.
And, you know, what did they do with the horns? Okay, so these gentlemen, like, you know, John Philip Sousa with the horns and that kind of thing, what did they do to actually change their harmonics after the Catholic Church, you know, then changed the orientation of the mouth and how the mouth passed sound over the vocal cords? Because that's what you're telling me, that the oof and the C, when they dropped that, they changed the structure of the mouth, they changed the amount of air passing over the vocal cords, changed the use of the muscles, and that totally changed the harmonics. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that is a big part of it, yes. The first step in changing the scale and changing the pitches that are used comes in the way that the music is composed. So once you alter the thinking of those that are composing the music, eventually the equipment changes to accommodate that. And when you look back, for example, at the Pythagorean school, of course, Pythagoras was brought up and educated in the mystery sciences of ancient Egypt, and those that followed him broke everything down into numbers. They recognized that everything was numeric. So when you talk about Pythagorean tuning and Pythagorean music, you're talking about musical tones and intervals that are based on the numbers between 1 through 5. So,
okay, but now in Egypt, you know, they had a different numbering system, so that did his interpretation right there also then alter or stagger the original resonance and frequencies when he put it in these, you know, glyphs that we now call numbers? You don't see those glyphs in the hieroglyphs in Egypt. How they use numbers were only vertical lines in groupings.
Never
used a two or the, what we call a three or a four. It was always three vertical lines or two, and then once they multiplied, they would actually use another geometric shape to represent the multiplication of five or the multiplication of three. But they never, ever took and made a geometric form that we now call three. There's no such thing existed then. So did Pythagoras making a three and a four and taking geometry and making that particular shape also stagnate, or should I say not stagnate, but shifted the resonance then of the harmonic by doing that and labeling it as such?
Now, that is a very amazing point that I haven't gone into depth to research, but I think my first response would be yes, because
wow, that's amazing.
Because this is why I love talking to you, Doc, because you always bring something new to the table. Because I mean, the use of numbers in itself is to differentiate, and the first thing to be before there were things. There were numbers, if you can imagine that, because when you generate these frequencies, they had to, and you start to count the frequencies, which you do by cycles per second. That would be where you come up with these numbers. I mean, the numbers are there to describe frequencies, which is something that I always often share with those that always want to go through decoding numbers. You know, people go, you know, you have a lot of people that are into numerology and all that kind of stuff, and it's very powerful and has its accuracy, but people think that the number three has a particular power that the number four or the number five doesn't have, that the number eight or number nine has or doesn't have. But what you're really looking at is you're counting, when you start counting, you're counting frequency, because you're counting how often something happens. So if you could just take and appreciate the frequency for what it is, if you can know that frequency without knowing the numbers that are connected to it, you have a pure connection to that frequency.
So that's why they didn't have what we call numbers in these ancient stellars, et cetera. There's no such thing in Babylon, Babylonian text. There's no such thing, like I said, in the hieroglyphs, et cetera, how they were able to, I guess, stabilize the discussion of a harmonic was with a pure geometric, what we call light code, which is a vertical line. That's how they basically kept the count. So they didn't use all this. And that was interesting because maybe there was a part of their brain that was so knowing, okay, that was so obvious and resonating within them, that to the extent of just making that one line or two lines or three lines, that nothing else needed to be elicited at that time to help the individual understand what was really being communicated. Well, we've got to go to a word from our sponsor for a minute, but I think that is so important that we must come back to this, because obviously I think you know where I'm going, because now we're looking at, you know, hip-hop and a lot of other things, and where are those resonances relative to where we have been in discussion right now, in relationship to the original harmonics and to the original sounds that precipitate matter. So are you telling me that the sounds that these individuals are making, now check this connection, that the level of resonance that these individuals are uttering is responsible for the type of clothing that they wear that doesn't fit the body, that basically has difficulty even taking on a human contour, that, you know, the need for ink as a new form of clothing to body, are those the harmonics in the that they're now expressing? That
I think we're going to want to take this commercial break before we get into this.
This question. Well, hold on to that question. You know, everybody write that down, that question, so we can hear what the master is going to tell us about that. Because if sound precedes materialization, then wow, what are we saying here? What are you telling us? And we'll be right back. Hold on to that idea. We'll be right back after this message. We'll be right back.
From Jewel Publications, Straight from the Heart by Dr. Jewel Pookrum, an incredible volume of work, Dr. Jewel explores the genesis of disease, prostate health, and sexuality, as well as sharing a new look at the effects emotions play in the resolution of cancer. Straight from the Heart is an outpouring of wisdom that you will read over again. Get your paperback or ebook copy today.
Well, greetings. If you've just tuned in, welcome. You're listening to the Dr. Jewel Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel, and this show is being brought to you by the Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, broadcasting the science of light and living, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. And we have a fabulous special guest for us. Many of you are aware of him. He is one of the jewels of the Jewel Network, who hosts our wonderful show, Music for the Mind of a Scientist, every Friday at 7 p.m., Mr. Maurice Thompson, and he's here today to really talk to us about some very esoteric, but yet and still very necessary information about what is really happening to us and around us in regard to resonance, frequency, and sound. And so, you know, we left before the break with a very profound question, because up to this point, Maurice has taken us to the understanding that sound and resonance is what determines the manifestation of matter, that is, that everything that's around us, and that that was corrupted at many levels. The translation of these harmonics into a geometry that we now call numbers, okay, may have contributed to the alteration of the pure frequencies, as well as the alteration of the instruments, so that they no longer are able to resonate the pure sounds that originally allowed us to stay in harmony with the natural resonance of matter around us, with Mother Earth. And so if it is true that sound precedes manifestation, then are we looking, based on the music industry right now, the types of sounds that they are emitting, are they literally precipitating and demonstrating to us through the association of how these individuals dress, how they care for themselves, etc.? They are showing us what the end result of those resonances, those harmonics, literally manifest in reality in our present state of existence. Is that what we're looking at, Maurice? Tell us.
I think that is a very accurate depiction. And one of the key ways that we can look at this is in the world of hip-hop music. Now, let me start off with my disclaimer that being born in the late 70s and growing up in the 80s and 90s, that hip-hop is a very integral part of my upbringing. And I think that in its purest essence and with an open mind and an active brain, it can help to be part of the healing that so many people, that the entire human family has been looking for so long. With that said, with it unbridled in its natural in the way that it's going right now, yes, it is definitely the product of a very deliberate delivery of attack on the people that choose to listen to it and engage it. And this is how it works. One of the basic components of...
Now, wait. I think that that's very important here. That needs to be reiterated. You're saying that the music that is now being generated from this group of individuals who say that they are producing hip-hop music literally is attacking its listeners? Is that what you just said?
Yes. It is. Not only is it attacking listeners, but it is the product of a portion of society that has already been attacked. It's a cycle with this attack.
Wow.
And here's how it works. One of the largest components to hip-hop music is a phenomenon called sampling. Sampling, yes. And what sampling is when you take a piece of music and you literally are taking a piece of the music and replaying that small piece of the music over and over again.
Okay.
Hip-hop DJs used to do what's called find the break. So the part of a song where the music breaks down to typically mainly the drum and a couple of other instrumental pieces, the DJ would take that and keep playing that one part over and over again so people could continue to dance to that. And as people continued to dance to it, the DJs began to recite little poetic ditties on top of it, and that's where the origins of rapping over a beat came from.
Okay.
So you have already created music that is being used to recreate something new called hip-hop. But you have to keep in mind that the already recorded music has a frequency, and it has an energy that's being placed into that, and it has all of those people that put their energy into the creation of that piece of music. So when you sample a song, you're automatically working with the frequencies of those that had nothing, quote unquote, had nothing to do with you. So you have to be very aware and very conscientious of what you're sampling and how you're using it. Because if somebody had a destructive mindset, if you sample their song, you're reverberating that destructive mindset and don't even know it. You're just doing it because you think it sounds good.
Wow. Okay, now that is very profound. If I'm following what you're saying, because lately I've been exposed to this production on cable TV known as Unsung, okay? And what happens on Unsung is that they take and look at all the groups, you know, voice or musical groups that were successful at one point and then either fell into oblivion or, you know, they show their demise. That's literally what they do. They show their rise and fall, okay, in the music industry. And so when we look at many of these individuals who, for example, had diseases, and it was their disease literally that destroyed their physical body. But obviously the diseases that they succumbed to were not, some of them were definitely not of a rapid onset. So these individuals had been ill for long periods of time, and then probably with the demand and the lifestyle that these musicians had to sustain as musicians, you know, entertaining at nighttime when the brain wasn't allowed to be able to make its proper amount of melatonin that regenerates tissue, et cetera, that they finally were not able to bring harmony back into the body, and so they and their body separated. So therefore, while these individuals are singing and while they're writing and composing the music, are you saying that it's captivating these harmonics that are out of balance because the body's out of balance, and that everybody who listens to that also is listening to those aberrant harmonics? Did you just say that?
I'm saying you have a very strong, unless you know what it is that you're doing with the frequency as you take it in, you're running a very strong chance of carrying on the energies that were captured in that initial recording and perpetuating those throughout the life of this new song. So if there was upsetness and tension in a recording session, if there was an altered mindset due to drug use, which we know is very prevalent in the music industry, that happened in that recording, and then you take that recording and take a piece of it and try to make another song out of it, unless you know how to retune and you know how to alter the frequencies that you're using as a tool now, you can be passing that on.
Wow, that is amazing. So when we're looking at these very disjointed and very chaotic lifestyles of these individuals socially, and then they also are the same individuals who are entertaining us with the use of their voice or the creation of sounds from the instruments they play, we are also now being aligned with the resonance rate of their malfunction and disharmony. Is that what you just said?
Yeah. And on top of that.
Wow.
Now,
and people are paying for that? That's amazing.
Well, you know, when you know, some people, hey, it's a lot of people that want a lot of different things. So they take that on. But another interesting point is when you can't, especially, and it's really prevalent now, there seems to be this speeding up of frequencies that happens in music. And even before hip-hop music, it's been noted that, you know, every 10 years or so, the music gets a little bit faster, pitches vary and alter just a little bit. I mean, from big band music to smaller bands to doo-wop to soul to R&B to disco to old school hip hop to gangster rap hip hop to this newer version of crunk hip hop, where it's like even a higher pitch. It seems like the pitches are either going very high or very low. You have an addition of a lot of synthesized instrumentation, which are nothing but high frequency oscillations that are used, and they just give them these labels of different electronic instruments. Now, keep in mind, if the musical scale is already off, and then the concert pitch is already off, then you already have a very stressed listening space. And then when you raise frequencies very high or lower frequencies very low, then that means you're even distorting the stress even more. And when the human body undertakes on hours upon hours upon hours of listening to that distorted frequency, it literally causes the DNA to generate a different set of protein, a different set of amino acids, and a different combination of proteins than it would in its normal state. And the combined bombardment of that stress literally brings you to the point where individuals that take drugs might actually be looking for some type of a relief from the stuff that they're listening to all the time. The vibrations might be so far off that the act of getting your entire body tattooed is a resonance that aligns to what you think is normal or what you think is you. And then you combine in all the cultural implications and all the social, political scenarios that are going on, and people are really stuck right where they are. And what do? To release themselves from being so stuck? Create more music and perpetuate the entire cycle all over again.
Well, this is very profound here, but, you know, I'm looking at what's going on in the chat room, and people are really responding to what it is that you said. And we have a question here, because this has gone on so long here. We're just almost out of time, Maurice, so I hope, you know, I'm envisioning that you will take this up on Friday if you can and move forward with further discussion on this, because one of the things that I did want us to go into was the fact that now there's instruments, tools that are now being produced that are literally exploiting the universal pharmaceutical capabilities of the brain. And so with the exasperation and stress of the drug industry, whether it's supposedly illegal drugs or pharmaceutical drugs, we've now advanced technologically where harmonics, resonances, can be utilized to stimulate the neurons of the brain to make their own opiates. And so now all you have to do is just buy the little gizmo and put it on your head, and you can innately become high or sedated or whatever else you need, and you don't have to take the drugs anymore. And now, of course, this is being alleged that it doesn't have all the ill effects as physically taking the drugs would have, but we know that that's not true, because just understanding neurophysiology, that if you're stimulating the brain cells with a particular frequency that would make morphine for you, and you cause those neurons to make morphine for a half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour with this thing on your head, you're going to have the same problems with the organs of the body, because morphine made by the neurons of the brain and morphine made literally pharmaceutically by a pharmaceutical company is processed in the same way. So here we are with another use of the aspect of the electromagnetic spectrum known as sound that people, again, in their awareness, have no idea of what it is that they're literally moving forward with. So in your chat room, they have questions about who's making the instrument. If we make the instruments, you know, what do we need to do to go back and restructure and recreate or manifest instruments that will move us back into the natural state of resonance with Mother Earth, et cetera. And my question is that, you know, what's the qualifications that a person has to meet themselves to be able to even create the instrument? Because obviously if that person has imbalances in their body or diseases and whatever else, they can't even begin to be the source that would manifest that. So
now, if I can respond to that quickly, because I know we only have a few minutes.
Right.
The beauty to most instruments, well, let me put it like this. Most tuning and most music that's generated is either generated via nowadays is either electronic, a keyboard or a piano, pianos, organs, or guitars. Pianos and guitars, they have strings. They are just as easy to retune. Now, it just takes a certain amount of research and dedication to learning about the different scales and which one you want to go towards. There are some that retune the A from 440 to 432. There are some that retune a middle C from 523.5 to 528. And there are a lot of arguments in either one of those directions. But piano can be easily tuned.
Are we saying that the person has to be healthy, too? Physically, the body has to be in balance.
Oh, yeah. There definitely is. You definitely... The balance that is required to even comprehend the full scale of what it is that you're undertaking when you decide that you want to take music and present it in a way that is going to be more wholesome and more healthy, that's going to be a benefit to humanity for time to come, that is definitely, that's definitely a balanced line of thinking. And in order to do anything like that to benefit and help others, you've got to help yourself first. You've got to.
Okay. So that everybody has to strive to come into balance, and obviously having more neurons functioning is definitely going to help. Well, you know, it's just about that time. This has been great. Maurice, I'm so glad that you took the time out of your busy schedule to come and just chat with me. I just really wanted to get the ends here on what we also have to look at as far as sound goes and what we expose ourselves to. As you know, Consequences 2012 with Dr. Delbert Blair is going to be with us tomorrow. And please, everyone, make sure that you tune in on Friday at 7 for Music Host for the Music for the Mind of a Scientist show. Please. And, you know, he created this fabulous music for us for balancing the brain by day and by night. For all of our participants who are on the balancing program, you definitely want to get that to a quality music. So with that, I just want to thank you so much, Maurice, and we'll look forward to having you address this again real soon. I hope you move forward with this on Friday, and everyone tune in tomorrow for Truth and Consequences 2012, and I have to say good night. I love you all. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Doc, again, thank you so very much. It's been an honor, and hopefully you will return the favor, and you'll come by for the Music for the Mind of the Scientist show real soon.
Oh, that would be fun. Okay, love you. Bye-bye.
Love you too. Thank you. Take care.
www.thejewelnetwork.net. If you'd like to reach us, please send an email to info@thejewelnetwork.net.